Hi there. If you like what we do here at ProWrestling.net and want to show us some support, there's no better way to do so than becoming a ProWrestling.net member. For $7.50 a month, if you just want to try it out for a month, or $5.50 a month if you take the annual option, you get ad-free access to ProWrestling.net, access to all of our member-exclusive audio updates, including the .NET Weekly audio show, which this week featured a great conversation between Jason Powell and Bruce Mitchell from PW Torch. If you would like to become a ProWrestling.net member, head over to ProWrestling.net, click the membership link, and you can be signed up within minutes. And now, enjoy the show. This is the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, a production of ProWrestling.net. I'm Will, he's Jake. You can follow us on Twitter at Will Pruitt and at Barnett Jake. On today's show, New Japan Pro Wrestling's G1 Climax 27 is happening. We name our MVPs, our best matches, and discuss how we think the tournament will play out. So, Jake, you and I were talking. Actually, I think we could have recorded this show before we started recording today, because we just got caught up in a discussion about New Japan Pro Wrestling's G1 Climax 27 tournament happening right now. And I think one of the most remarkable things about it is you and I were just sitting around chatting about it and, like, earnestly discussing paths to winning and things like that. And that's not something we usually get from tournaments in pro wrestling in the U.S. And I know the G1 is like this every year, but it's a bit of a breath of fresh air, right?
Yeah, I mean, round robin tournaments are difficult to, you know, make suspenseful because, you know, and I think they've done a much better than average job of doing it here. But, you know, typically it usually ends up with a lot of people bunched up towards the top of the bracket and then a lot of people with very few points and no chance to win. And I think they've managed to, I guess, create paths where, you know, even people who currently look like they're, you know, they're 4 points out of, of the tournament lead, you know, could potentially still win because they have important tiebreaker victories and things like that if they're able to run the table. And so I'm you know, really enjoying this year's G1. It's been nice to see even those who, I guess, you know, weren't favorites for the tournament or, you know, still, you know, are kind of being ruled out of contention at this point, having great tournaments, you know, and having unexpectedly good runs, you know, like guys like Juice Robinson and Mike Elgin, who I think you could mathematically eliminate at this point.
I think he's fully mathematically eliminated.
I think even though, you know, he's got like 2 points at this juncture, you know, and completely out of contention, you know, for a finals appearance, he benefited quite a bit just from being in the tournament and will take some momentum away from it, having competed in matches against top stars and looking good in the process. So, I mean, there's things that the G1 does for New Japan when it comes to setting up paths for people to not just, you know, have good showings in a tournament, but potentially ascending from, you know, a lower place on the card to a higher place simply by having competitive matches that people have enjoyed.
In some ways, it's like watching a month-long Royal Rumble in that it sets up what's going to happen in the next like 6 months in New Japan. It tells you these are the matches you're going to see again, because generally if a champion loses, they end up being challenged for their title by the person they lost to in the lead up to Wrestle Kingdom. It tells you what feuds to watch out for, and it's a nice little reset on the year. You get some new blood mixed in, which I think we're seeing with Zack Sabre Jr. getting fully integrated into the New Japan roster with it, with Kota Ibushi's return. And you just get some really fun matchups that you might not get elsewhere on a New Japan show, because Tanahashi isn't going to face a ton of guys. Like, his dance card ends up pretty similar. It's Okada, it's Omega sometimes. It's, you know, you're not always going to get to see Tanahashi against Ishii even, and this is an example where we're gonna get to see that pretty soon.
Absolutely. I mean, do you have a top three matches you watched thus far?
Top three, Tanahashi against against Kota Ibushi, definitely up there from, I believe, actually have a list of matches I'm going to pull up on my laptop right now, because I don't know that I will get all of the knights right off of the top of my head. But as I wait for it to load, come on, Google Drive, be cool. There we go. This is great radio. I'm going to go Kota Ibushi versus Hiroshi Tanahashi from Night 11. That was probably my favorite match, hands down. Really fun, great stuff from both of them. And watching Tanahashi play the heel in that match made, like, delighted me in a way. And then actually, I'm going to have to give it to two Michael Elgin matches. His matches against both Kazuchika Okada and Kenny Omega delighted me. Elgin put up much more of a challenge in both matches than I thought. He did really, really well, and I'm not a big Mike Elgin fan. I think he's a really strange wrestler in that he's got the big matches in him, but I just don't care at any other point except for while he's wrestling those big matches. But he had two really great big matches against Okada and Omega.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree on two of those, Tanahashi and Ibushi, and Omega and Elgin. Mm-hmm. Are two of my three favorites. And I am going to put Okada and Juice Robinson as my third.
That one almost did it for me.
Yeah, simply because I just really enjoyed watching Robinson feel, you know, just kind of ascend up the ladder in that match. It really felt like they were trying their best to make him into a star that they could use, you know, in a much higher position at Wrestle Kingdom next year. You know, if he continues to have a strong 2017 post G1, he could be in a position to challenge for a championship or something at Wrestle Kingdom.
At least the never title.
Yeah, it may not be a very important one. I don't know, but certainly he'll be taken seriously at this point.
And I think he could be in a more important position after Wrestle Kingdom, around the New Beginning shows, or around say Dominion next year. I think we could be talking about Juice Robinson in the U.S. or IC title picture, maybe even in the world title picture in New Japan. And I think it very much based on his performance in the G1, and especially that really gutsy performance against Okada. Like, it's rare to watch a match where someone goes in obviously overmatched and still tries to fight the way he did. And he really looked like a million bucks in defeat there.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I mean, and I guess from a surprises standpoint, I think Evil has had a great tournament as well. And we talked about that a little bit before we started recording. But he was somebody that I did not have like gigantically high expectations for, coming into this tournament. But he's pleasantly surprised me, particularly in his matches with Omega and Sanada. I thought they were very good.
Yeah, he's been, I've been kind of surprised by Sanada too. I found Sanada versus Yano to be one of my, like, guilty pleasure favorites, as Toru Yano matches are in the G1. Sanada versus Yano was really fun to me, but Evil is having a great tournament, and I think becoming a lot more than just another guy that stands with Naito, but kind of breaking out on his own through this tournament. And it's nice. I think what makes this a little more fun than something like the Royal Rumble, with the same goal getting accomplished, is you get 9 matches from each of these guys. You really get a sense of who they are. You get some personality. And even as wrestlers lose, I mean, you've had the great story with Nagata losing every match thus far. But, the great story of him kind of almost getting there each time and just not making it, not being able to climb that mountain one more time. And that has been kind of a fascinating and neat story to me.
Yeah, I think he's been something of an emotional favorite for a lot of people who have been following the tournament. And you know, it's a bittersweet showing for him in the tournament, but certainly an excellent story for somebody who, you know, is clearly on his last run and just kind of trying to show that he's still got it, but just coming up a little bit short. And, you know, it gives him a nice swan song and a way to bow out gracefully when it's all over.
Yeah. What have you thought of Zach Sabre Jr.'s tournament? He's another newcomer to the G1. He hasn't been in this kind of tournament before. How do you think he's done?
It's been fun to watch him compete with, you know, with genuine New Japan heavyweights. I really enjoyed his match with Tanahashi. You know, I think that's probably his signature victory, you know, in the tournament thus far. I also liked his match with Kota Ibushi, even though he didn't come out on top. I liked the clash of styles there. So I think he's sort of coming into his own as a contender in the heavyweight division here. And he's on top of his bracket at this point. I think it's a four-way tie there. And he does have a path to some suspenseful final three matches heading into the finals.
Yeah, we get Zack Sabre Jr. versus Naito here, I think, tomorrow. So that should be really exciting. But we got
I think he has a rematch with Ishii coming up too.
Yeah, and that one's going to be really, really fun to watch. I loved their match at the G1 special in the U.S. Month ago now. Time flies. Who for you is the MVP of the G1 thus far?
It's Ibushi by a mile, at least for me. It's just been so much fun to watch him take off the anime tiger mask mask and become Kota Ibushi again. And I don't know, you know, what his contractual status, you know, will remain to be with New Japan, but just what a series of matches he's had and probably will continue to have in this tournament. It's just been so much fun. And I think, you know, aside from his match with Bad Luck Fale, there hasn't really been, you know, a clunker in the bunch. And I'm not saying that the match he had with Fale was bad. It just isn't one of my favorites. But he's got Goto.
It's hard to have a great match with Bad Luck Fale.
What's that?
It's hard to have a great match with Bad Luck Fale.
It is.
Unless but, you're
I'm excited to see, you know, because, you know, he's got Goto, Nagata, and Yoshihashi left on his schedule. And it's definitely possible for him to run the table. And if the stars align, he could still end up winning his bracket. I think that's one of the more exciting things about this year's tournament, is that there's still, even though people are a few points out of being in that top echelon, there's still a path to victory for him,
especially on the A block. I mean, almost anyone in the A block could still rise up and win it with Ibushi, Fale, Goto, Makabe, those four each having 6 points each, and then Naito, Ishii, Tanahashi, and Sabre each having 8 points. 2 points a match, three matches left to go. Anyone could win that. I don't think anyone in this bracket is loss proof the way, say, Okada and Omega are for the most part. They've shown that they don't mind having Tanahashi lose a match or two. They don't mind having Sabre, Ishii, Naito, them lose. So it's not out of the question to think that Ibushi rises up in his bracket. The A block is really anyone's. The B block to me is the kind of fascinating one, because at the top of the B block right now, we have Okada, who has gone through the first six matches of the tournament undefeated, and Omega, who has only one loss in the tournament thus far. Each of them have three matches left, and that third match, it's Okada versus Omega 3. How do you see this playing out? I kind of wonder if Omega wins and wins the block, because he then has the tiebreaker over Okada, but that's Okada's only loss in the tournament.
Yeah, that seems to be the, I guess for me, the most interesting outcome, because then you have three matches between them. You have a clean victory. victory for Okada. You have the sort of time limit draw they had, and then you have an Omega victory, which, you know, they have to have a rubber match at some point. And that becomes, you know, the, you know, a big draw whenever it takes place, because they're both champions at this point. And, you know, and depending on how well Kenny is able to establish that U.S. championship and develop its prestige, it could be, you know, one of the biggest matches New Japan can offer, you know, when they get back together. So it certainly seems like the ideal outcome for that bracket. And I mean, I don't know when we, you know, when else we might see it. So I'm still hopeful that we get the Ibushi and Omega final that we that I've always wanted, but seemed very unlikely at the start of this.
I'm more convinced that an Ibushi versus Omega final is possible. And, you know, if Ibushi isn't signed, like if he's not going with New Japan as Kota Ibushi to the Dome, then I get doing it here. I think there is a ton to put into that match at the Tokyo Dome. But no matter what, I hope we see Omega versus Ibushi in the next 6 months. Like that is deeply important to my life. I need it to happen. And I wouldn't be shocked to see it in the final of this either. I think that would be a really fun path. I could also see them. I could see, you know, an Okada and Tanahashi final, I think a lot of people wouldn't be psyched about. We've seen a lot of them in big matches. It's always good, but still, an Omega Tanahashi final would be fine. Do you think they would go with something like Omega and Ishii again? I don't see that as a possibility.
No, but I think Omega and Naito is possible. Oh,
yeah. They had a great match as part of last year's G1. If I recall.
Yeah, they had a great match. And so there may be, you know, there's a story to tell there with Naito being out to settle that score. Yeah. And so, you know, there's still plenty of possibilities coming out of that A block. And by no means, you know, do I have some kind of crystal ball to tell you what the future holds? But it's just, you know, my own selfish, you know, self-interest to see Okada Omega and Ibushi in the finals. But by no means is that set in stone or even the most likely scenario. So I'm excited to see it play out, just because I think these final three matches, you know, depending on how things break for, you know, for a couple of guys, you know, hopefully we'll get a surprise outcome and one that, you know, that gets people excited to watch that final.
Yeah. I'm just kind of hoping Yuji Nagata gets some points. I'd like to see him win one. Not against Ibushi, but I would like to see him win one.
I'm looking at the bracket breakdown here, and he's got Ibushi and Fale and Sabre left. So
he can beat
I guess Fale would be the easy one, but we'll see what happens.
Oh, on that note, I think we'll wrap it up for today. Thanks for chatting about the G1 with me, Jake. That's
it's been a great year for this tournament. I mean, more so than even last year, which I enjoyed extensively. It just seems like they've managed to keep things exciting right down to the wire, and the outcomes didn't seem quite as in focus as they did for last year's tournament.
Well, and there are things like that Omega versus Okada match where, like, that got announced, and they announced that it would be on the last night of regular G1 matches, and I just find myself sitting here like, come on, let's go, let's get to that. I need that. Give me that for life.
Are there time limits on these G1 matches?
Minutes.
Yeah, so yeah. I guess that's always hanging over their heads too.
Yeah, that'll be actually. I think that's the most interesting part of that Okada and Omega match is it's a 30-minute time limit when they just went 60. That's going to be fun. But yeah, this has been a really great year. I think, folks, if you're looking for somewhere to catch up on stuff about the G1, I'm going to be publishing a list of matches today, as it's probably up on the site as you listen to this, as part of my weekly blog that became not so weekly in the month of July. But also, voicesofwrestling.com has a great breakdown of each night. Some really great reviewers over there, and it's a good place to look if you're just looking to find a match or two or some stuff that you want to check out. That's a really good place to go to just find like a couple matches to go to New Japan World and watch. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast. For more, please subscribe to this podcast in Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and a review, show us that you appreciate us, and if you want even more content, check out ProWrestling.net's membership option.